Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast.
You have to know what you're getting in players because, you know, Aristotle said, and I love this quote, you are what you repeatedly do. And I think coaches sometimes don't put enough emphasis on the productivity level. And can a player produce, or how does a player produce without scoring points?
Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches Podcast. This is Adam Gordon, and today we are joined by ESPN's National Recruiting Director, Paul Biancardi. Paul and I have a really good conversation about the impact that coronavirus has had on college hoops, recruiting, and even the basketball media, which is a group that, you know, I really hadn't thought about until we started preparing for this interview. But, you know, just yet another industry that's, you know, reeling because of the impacts of COVID. We also talk at length about evaluating, the art of evaluating, and what Paul's learned over the years about that skill, and recruiting, and what some of the best recruiters and evaluators in the country have in common. We hope you enjoy our conversation. If you do, please write us a review, and please follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com. Okay, before we jump into today's podcast, I want to talk to you briefly about the Rising Coaches membership. You know, so many people ask, what is it? What do you get? Will this help me get a job? That's the million-dollar question. A lot of times people hit us up when they need job advice and asking for help. And look, we're happy to give advice and help anytime we can, whether you're a member or not. And we can't guarantee that signing up for a membership is going to get you a job. We don't want to get into that. But what we can guarantee is if you do sign up, there's some tremendous content on our member site, and we are constantly bringing in new coaches and guests to speak to our group. So we really feel strongly that it'll help you with your development. If you want to meet coaches in the profession from all different levels, which I always strongly advise, you never know who can help you in this business, both personally and professionally. I can guarantee you'll have a lot of opportunities to create genuine relationships with those people and different coaches that you would have never met otherwise. And if you want to be a part of a community of coaches that's there to bounce ideas off of, help you, support you, then please, I think Rising Coaches is something that you'd be interested in. So if you think that this is something that you can benefit from, check out our website, risingcoaches.com/membership. It's only $120 a year, which is $10 a month to be a part of it. That's an annual fee, and we hope you'll consider being a part of our community of now over 500 coaches, which is awesome, in just 5 months of having the membership program open. So grateful for everyone that's a part of it, and we hope that you will consider joining. Paul, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
I'm great, Adam. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on the podcast, especially, you know, such a crazy time right now with the coronavirus, you know, affecting all of us. You know, and one of the areas that, you know, I'm sure it definitely affects is the basketball media. You know, obviously, aside from all the personal effects that it's had, you know, professionally, you know, what's been the biggest impact for you?
Well, from a media standpoint, I mean, obviously without the games, we're all kind of lost, right? The ability not to watch games, call games, coach games. It seems like for all of us coaches, that's been our way of life. And when you're not involved in a game, what's the next thing you do? You go out recruiting. And obviously with the coronavirus, everybody's mandated to stay at home. And so nobody can do any face-to-face recruiting and no campus visits, no home visits. So it's really put recruiting on the back burner because coaches, when you think about this, at the end of February, you know, they were coaching their team, the college coaches, and the high school kids were playing in state championships or getting ready to play in state championships. So there wasn't a lot of recruiting going on towards the end of February, and certainly not in March. And then the virus hit hard, and then recruiting just stopped in terms of you know, coaches going out to evaluate or maybe conversations happening or campus visits, so everything now has to be done electronically, and it's really not the same though coaches can stay in contact with recruits, but you can't evaluate them as people, and certainly you can't get them as players. So I think this is going to delay everything. The NCAA has until April 15th, where there's no recruiting going on at all live. So we'll have to wait and see when that gets lifted, when college coaches can go out and recruit, evaluate, and have campus visits, and then it'll start to pick up again. But it's going to be way behind for the class of 2020. And before you know it, we're going to start evaluating the class of 2021 for next year.
Yeah, the one thing that hasn't seemed to slow down is the transfer wire. It seems like, if anything, it's, you know, more kids are leaving earlier, maybe because they're not able to be around their coaches, staff, and their teammates. And that seems to be the one thing that I keep getting phone calls every day from coaches who are, hey, have you heard of this kid? How was he when you coached him? So on and so forth. What impact do you think this is having on the transfer scene?
Well, I've talked to a couple of transfers this week, and I think those guys were going to transfer anyway, because, as you know, the NCAA was going to pass that rule where kids could transfer and be eligible to play right away. Now, it wasn't going to happen in the spring, but I believe it was going to happen in August. Now, that's still going to go through based on the situation with the coronavirus and all other important matters. It remains to be seen. But I think kids were going to transfer anyway. But again, these guys that are transferring in the portal, some of them have been recruited before by the schools that are recruiting them again. So it makes it easy for them to have a relationship. I think transfers can make a decision a little bit easier than high school kids, right? Because they've been through it before. They may know a previous coaching staff. They might have even went on a visit to a particular school that's recruiting them now. So you see a lot of kids going in, and then you see a lot of kids I see, you know, making some decisions, based on experience with that staff or that school in the past. And that's almost like the coronavirus, right? The transfer portal is going to get worse before it gets better.
No question. Have you seen it? I know you talk to so many coaches every day. Have you seen any or heard of any, you know, unique things that coaches are doing right now to try to stay ahead of the curve in terms of recruiting?
I don't think you can get ahead of this at all. I think what they're doing is, from the coaches that I've spoken to, which have been at all levels of Division I and Division II, you know, they're maintaining relationships and contact with their own team. That's the first set of recruits. Those are the most important players that you have to talk to on a daily or weekly basis. So the coaches are really spending time with their players, whether it's on a text, group text, individual text, FaceTime, certainly. Some coaches, because they have the time, are also more involved and more engaging in social media, whether it's Instagram, Twitter, and some are even trying to look at TikTok right now, because that's where their kids are at. I think it's so vital for a college coach today to understand where their kids are in the social media world. And they don't have to necessarily communicate with them on there, but maybe recognize them on there or just give them a little shout out wherever they are on social media. But really, as far as recruits go, they're doing the same thing. They're trying to set up FaceTime, talks, if you will, face-to-face, because it's certainly better to see somebody's facial reaction in a conversation than over a text message. And that's all they can do right now, Adam. There's not much else. You can watch game film. A lot of programs have the video coordinators taping games from the season or getting games from this season, whether they're high school regular season games, state championships, games were on TV, games were streamlined. Coaches are breaking down film. That I do know, because they're watching some of the prospects that they're looking at and then going back on film, because that's all they can do right now.
Yeah, no question. Paul, do you have a TikTok account? Are you active on there?
I am not. That's my next phase in the social media world. I'm heavy on Twitter, as you know, and Instagram. I'm on Facebook, but TikTok is coming next.
Okay. Are we going to see you doing some choreographed dances, or are you going to be more of a consumer instead of a creator on there?
Well, that's a great question. My kids, first of all, their recommendation, I have two daughters, their recommendation is not to go on it at all. But I think, as you said, a consumer to just look around and see what's happening. I think my dance moves may be over from the 90s.
You mentioned how coaches are breaking down film right now. Let's talk a little bit about that, because I know that is what everyone's going to. That's really all you can do right now is watch, you know, prospects on film. Talk about from an evaluation standpoint, do you think you can get a great eval on a kid on film, or is there a certain aspect that, you know, you have to be there in person to really get a sense of?
Well, the answer is yes and yes. You can get a good evaluation on a kid, but you have to see him live. There's no doubt in my mind. I can't think of a coach that I know of that may have taken a kid on film, just film, and he turned out to be great. Now, there may be some cases out there, but by and large, you know, a lot of coaches use film at the beginning stages of the evaluation process to see if they like that player, or they use it on the back end to verify what they've already seen. In either case, film is great. But the one thing about film, Adam, you can't see and you can't detect is the physical measurables, you know, how influential they are in a game and the athleticism. The film just doesn't do it justice. But what I do like about film is you can see when you watch whole games, right? Coaches don't watch highlights. I don't know any coaches that watch highlights, you know, and offer a kid or get involved with a kid. Most coaches watch full games because you can see what goes on before the play, you know, during the play, and then after the play. And I think that tells you a lot about the player. You can see the whole court, certainly can see skill, basketball IQ, the understanding of spacing, how he interacts with his teammates, free throws happen. You know, you can see the coaching from the bench, but that's stuff you really get a better grip when you go in person. So if you do it both, film and live, you've got a great opportunity to get a good evaluation. And to me, recruiting is all about the evaluation. You and I can walk in a gym and know who's talented, but to peel back the layers to find out more about the traits of that person is the separating factor between a average recruiter and a really good recruiter.
Yeah, what are some of the key things that you look for, and what are some of the keys to being a great evaluator?
Well, you know, I did it as a coach for a long time at the Division I level, over 20 years. I did it at Division III for 3 or 4 years. So, you know, and then when I got into this job at ESPN, ranking and evaluating the best players in the country, you know, I thought I had a good eye. And it was good, but it wasn't as sharp as I thought it was. And I think that holds true for a lot of coaches. You know, they can see kids play and get a good feel and kind of understand what they're looking for. But you have to spend time in evaluating a prospect, just like the NBA. They have scouts that do it all the time, and that's why they're so good at it. For me, I break down my rankings and evaluation under what I call the four Ps. The performance of a player, the production, their potential, and then I put them in a projection category. And it's really the same thing I did when I was coaching at Boston College, Ohio State, head coach at Wright State, or at St. Louis. You got to see the performance, right? That's where you see the talent, whether it's in practice or in games. But you have to see somebody play well to have an interest. And then from that point, you want to track their performances and then figure out what their production level is. To me, that's the single most important phase of the four Ps, the production level of a player. When you watch that player, and if he was to come and play for you, what's he going to give you game in and game out? You know, maybe it's 8 points and 4 rebounds and 2 assists, but maybe it's 2 turnovers. You know, that's part of his production level, the negative side. You have to know what you're getting in players because, you know, Aristotle said, and I love this quote, you are what you repeatedly do. And I think coaches sometimes don't put enough emphasis on the productivity level. And can a player produce, or how does a player produce without scoring points? We all know as coaches that rebounding, assists, steals, team defense, individual defense, just hustle, energy, great body language. There's ways that you can be productive without even scoring points. So I think coaches got to look deeper into that to help their team, you know, function and flow. And then potential, you know, that to me is a snapshot of what a player can be someday. When you talk about potential, you always say, well, what if this and what if that? And you just got to be careful not to be asking about too many what ifs. Because if the what ifs are on a character side, I would hesitate to go forward with that recruit, no matter how talented. But if the what ifs are on the, you know, physical side, he needs to get stronger. He needs to get needs to maybe, you know, get a little bit faster. You can't change growth. Hopefully guys grow, but you can't bet on that. But you want to kind of figure out the potential. Is it physical? Is it skill? Is it, you know, aggressiveness? Or is it trait-wise? Do they have to play harder more often? Do they need more passion? You know, the what-if game goes into the potential game. You just got to be careful that you don't have too many what-ifs on your team, because then you have a lot of bad talent. And then the last phase is projection. When will that prospect that you see turn into a player? When do you think it will happen? How do you think it will happen? And what's the plan that you have to make it happen?
Yeah, that's great. That's so much good stuff and so much to digest. You mentioned...
Yeah, you know, sorry about that. It was long-winded.
No, it was great. It was great. I was just trying to figure out what I want to dive into next. So how many times do you feel like you need to see a kid before you have a good feel for them?
Well, as a player, I think you can see a kid play a couple of times and have a good feel for his physical attributes and his skill level. But to really know a player, I think you want to see him at least 3 to 5 times. And for me personally, I want to see a kid play really, really well, hopefully. And then I'd like to see him have a bad game, because I want to see what he's like after a bad game when his team wins. But how does he react when he plays well and his team loses? I look at that real closely, because I don't want him too happy when he plays well and his team loses. Right?
Right.
And then when he plays poorly and his team wins, is he happy for his team, even though he played lousy? So I think 3 to 5 times, you know, in that period, you have a chance to pull back some of the traits. And again, I think the traits are important, and you have to dive deep into the traits. I would tell every coach out there who recruits, you want to ask as many hard questions as you can early in the recruiting process, so you don't have to answer hard questions later in the recruiting process or once you have that player. So ask as much as you can early so you don't have to answer tough questions later.
Do you feel like you grew in terms of your ability to evaluate after you got out of coaching? Like, did you learn a whole lot more about it when this is all you know, focused on?
I did. I felt like I had a great baseline of evaluating, and I had a style that, you know, a checklist in my head, if you will, of what I was looking at. But when you do something every day, all the time, you know, again, you go back to that quote, you are what you repeatedly do. So for the last 10 years, I've done mostly nothing but evaluate. Yes, I've called a lot of games. Yes, I've run a lot of camps, but you know, that's the easy stuff in my mind. The evaluation, it constantly changes from season to season. And you got to dig. You got to dig on players' performances. You got to track them. You got to figure out the productivity level from a large sample of statistics. And then you got to figure out where you think he can fit best in the game. So you do that over and over again. And yes, that's why I have so much admiration for the really good NBA scouts who, you know, they do this, their livelihood depends on it. And I've had a lot of conversations, probably more conversations with NBA scouts over time than even college coaches. But I get a large influx, I'm sorry, of both.
Yeah, I had a similar experience where, you know, when I stepped out of coaching last year and got out of the rat race, I felt like I could see the maze from a bigger picture perspective. And I feel like, you know, continued to learn lessons even after coaching, in some ways more lessons, just a different perspective, which helps. What do you think some of the best evaluators, in terms of not evaluators, but coaches who are evaluating, what do some of the best do? And what are some of the best programs in the country? Obviously, we know Kentucky and the Dukes and North Carolina. You know, it's not hard to see who can play at that level, probably. But, like, what are some of the best?
No, but they make mistakes.
Sure.
Yeah, they make mistakes, too, though. Those kids transfer out of there. I think those programs know what they want, and they evaluate what they want among the best players in the country. But I think you got to look at the programs that get guys at them and take them in as freshmen, and then they leave as upperclassmen. They've done two things really well. They've evaluated well, and they have good player development. I think it goes hand in hand, right? You evaluate a good player, and he comes to you. He'll probably be a good player, but with emphasis on player development, he probably becomes a better player. Somebody you said to yourself, wow, you know, I knew he'd start for us, but I didn't know he'd make, you know, first team all league or player of the year in the conference, or he'd be a second round pick. But those guys at the highest level, Tom Izzo, John Calipari, Bill Self, they do a great job in player development too. The guys that transfer out of there, in my mind, they just can't cut it, or they weren't good enough to begin with. So that might go back to the evaluation.
So you think, you know, one of the biggest keys is knowing exactly what you're looking for in a player when you're evaluating?
I do. I think every coach, and when I talk to them, they all value, outside of the skill or the athleticism, right? Every coach puts a premium on, okay, I want athletes. I've got to have athletic team. I got to have scorers. I got to have shooters. I've got to have size. Not so much anymore, but that was once a focal point in the evaluation process. Got to have shooters at three positions or four positions. So every coach has their wants and their needs. But then they got to go, you know, a little bit deeper into what type of kid will fit with them. And that's where the traits come in. Like you take a look at, I talked to Bob Huggins a while ago about this, and he said, you know, he had a team that one time that had no enthusiasm at all. It didn't matter, athletes or skilled guys. So he made it a point to go out and recruit guys that had a tremendous passion for the game, like way above average. Guys that were enthusiastic to play all the time. And that was his one, you know, gotta have. And when I talk to Jay Wright, it's about basketball IQ and competitiveness. You know, those two things are important. So every coach has his, you know, non-negotiables, we'll say. And as assistant coach, you have to know what your head coach really values, really likes. Tony Bennett, for instance, he likes guys that obviously can shoot the ball. That's one of his top priorities. But he's looking for guys that are complete. He likes guys that can handle it, pass it, and defend as well as shooting. He likes complete players. You know, some coaches don't care about completeness. They just want one specific skill to have. So it varies, and that's what makes this evaluation process so intriguing, and that's what makes the game so beautiful.
Yeah, what advice would you give to somebody who's just trying to break in to the business or just getting started, you know, isn't a head coach, you know, doesn't get to pick who they necessarily want for their program, but they're just getting started as an assistant, or they want that assistant job? You know, what should they be doing from an evaluation standpoint or recruiting standpoint?
Well, understand, number one, that if you want to be in any profession for a long time, it's imperative that you treat everyone with kindness and respect. Doesn't mean you have to agree with everyone. Doesn't mean you have to say yes to everything. But how you leave off conversations, I think, is huge in today's day and age. I thought it was huge years ago. And once you build a relationship with somebody, don't stop that relationship just because they don't have prospects anymore. One of the biggest mistakes I see with with assistants is that they only call you when they need something, and people detect that right away. So if you recruit someone and you don't get them from that particular program, keep in touch with that program. Keep the lines of communication open. You don't know where you're going to be in years down the road. And they don't know where they're going to be. And there's a good chance that you guys are going to cross each other somewhere in the profession. So I think it's really important not to be, you know, the type of recruiter that just calls when they need something versus building a relationship. And then once you build it, you know, maintain that relationship. In terms of evaluating players, that's where all assistants to me have the biggest void. I would say a couple of things to make sure that you kind of avoid or do. Don't be afraid to be wrong. I mean, you're going to be wrong in the business, but you can't be afraid to be wrong. You have to trust your eyes and what you do. You obviously want to go to people that you trust on your staff or maybe a mentor in the profession for advice. But, you know, you find out what your head coach wants and then go look for it yourself. Number two, I would say is thinking that, you know, the great talent is more important than the right talent. A lot of coaches make a mistake on that. They see a kid that, you know, is just unbelievable and incredible talent-wise that they think they can get, but he doesn't fit, you know, the program, or he doesn't fit the head coach. And that's the difference between great talent and right talent. So don't make that mistake, because bad talent, you know, too many what ifs makes a team of too many what ifs, and now you have bad talent and usually have bad chemistry, and that leads to a losing season. Don't underestimate, you know, passion, motor, because we all have long days in coaching, long seasons, and you want that guy, like Huggins says, to come out with enthusiasm, competitiveness, the motor. That's big. And then when you're recruiting guys, stop chasing the uncoachable guy. You know, just don't get seduced by the talent. If a guy looks uncoachable, or he looks like he doesn't have a teachable spirit, or he has all the answers. You know, Bo Ryan always says, I want to recruit guys with questions, not with answers. You know, don't take the whiner with the excuses. Take the worker. You know, don't underestimate that.
What is some of the best recruiters, you know, from an assistant coach's standpoint? Let's not talk about that. You know, we talked about Bill Self, yeah, and Cal. What are some of the best assistant coaches / recruiters, you know, have in common? And aside from the eval part, because I know you talk to these kids and you probably get a sense for who's, you know, doing a good job actually building the relationships and selling their program. So what are some of the best assistant coaches have in common in that perspective?
I think persistence, you know, that to me, when I look back of, you know, why I had some success, it was persistence. Might've got the answer wrong, might've come up with the wrong evaluation, but I was persistent to get it right eventually. Everybody recruits guys that come, they're not good enough and they transfer. And then hopefully you recruit guys that can really help you win your conference and win big. So I would think persistency is important, and understanding how to read a situation. You know, that's part of the evaluation. If you know for circumstances beyond your control that you're not going to be able to get that player, you've got to read that and, you know, kind of know when to get out, know when to push up. It's really important, because the most important aspect of recruiting, I think, for all coaches, especially assistants who work endlessly and are consumed by it, is time. You know, they don't want to waste their time. They'll spend money in terms of travel and logistics and visits and everything they have to do, but they don't want to waste time. So you, as an assistant, want to make sure you're not wasting your head coach's time. And that's something you have to understand. So the greatest thing as an assistant coach is to be persistent, know who can play for your head coach, talent-wise and trait-wise, and don't waste your head coach's time trying to, A, convince him that this guy is good enough for you, or B, you know, you have a chance at that recruit when you really don't.
Paul, this was great stuff, great insight. Obviously, people can follow along with you on social media, and that's just at Paul Biancardi. and we appreciate you sharing your insight and wisdom.
Well, Adam, I want to ask you one question before
sure.
I go. I love what you guys are doing. I want you to tell me in a nutshell how it started and where it's going, because when I was coming up in the ranks as a volunteer assistant and then a graduate assistant, right, you don't get any lower than those two spots. You know, my greatest joy was saying hello to a, you know, college coach, an assistant or a head coach. You couldn't get access to people. You couldn't learn like you do today. You had to go to clinics and spend a lot of money. You had to invest in yourself, which all those things I did. But tell me about the Rising Coaches program, where it came from and where it's going, because I absolutely love it.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We started it, myself and Andy Farrell. You know, we were both at Clemson at the same time. I was the GA. He was the video coordinator. We had a manager there, Trey Meyer, who was right there with us as well. And you know, it's obviously a relationship business, and we didn't know anybody. You know, we were just getting started, and we just didn't think there were many opportunities out there for guys, you know, at the bottom of the totem pole like us. And so we decided to put together a conference, and, you know, we kind of put it strategically in Vegas right before the live period. And so it was easy for us to get speakers. Coaches were already there. And we just kind of told our buddies and, you know, I think that first year we had 30 people there. And it just, word of mouth took over. You know, the content that we had was great. The coaches that came and spoke were phenomenal. But the real value was, you know, those 30 people, you know, all became very close over the course of those 3 days and stayed connected. And now it's been 10 years. And, you know, I could tell you pretty much every one of those 30 people that were there. And the next year, you know, it just grew and grew and grew. And, you know, it's almost like each year is a new class that comes, and you know, over the years we've added events, and now since I stepped out of coaching last year, we've been able to expand what we do, and so we have a year-round membership where we try to provide the same things that our events provide. You know, we try to provide the quality content, but also more importantly to me, we try to provide that connection piece, and you know, the more people you know, the better your chances are going to be, and the more helpful it's going to be. And that's kind of always been, we've been about being inclusive and open, you know, open door policy to anybody in coaching, and, you know, just connecting with each other.
Well, I got to commend you and Andy. I know Andy too. Just what you're doing to put coaches in a position just to meet people in their profession. Number one, number two, the ability to get quality content and share it with coaches, that's going to accelerate. Both of those things are going to accelerate the growth of these young coaches. I mean, nothing takes the place of experience, but knowledge and wisdom you're sharing with them. I just think it's absolutely fantastic. And I really praise you and Andy for doing it.
Well, I appreciate it, Paul. And certainly we wouldn't get any of that quality content if people like yourself weren't so willing to give back to the profession and speak to our group, whether it's in person or on a podcast, which you've done both now, by the way. So, you know, thank you again for your willingness to help us out as always.
All right. Thanks again for having me. Let's do it again.
Thanks, Paul. Thanks for listening to the Rising Coaches podcast. Just another quick reminder, please write us a review, subscribe, and follow along with what we're doing at risingcoaches.com.